Are the reports that we've run out of vaccines in South Africa accurate?
This is the sensitive question, Alec. You know, the vaccines are being manufactured in Pretoria. When it comes to foot and mouth, it is the Agricultural Research Council and not Onderste Poort Biological Products. There was a time when it was the leading institution when it comes to animal health care, and especially the manufacturing of vaccines. But then gradually it ran out of capacity. And some 12, 13 years ago, the state decided to recapacitate it. And R500 million was budgeted for it. Now, we don't know up to this day what happened to that 500 million rand. When Minister John Steenhuisen took over, he dusted off those files and he vouched to get to the bottom of it. But we haven't had a progress report for quite a while. But then, in the meantime, this disaster has hit us. And now we import the vaccines from Botswana. It's an old vaccine. If I remember well, it was already developed in the early 1970s. And you've seen through COVID how often a virus can mutate. So you need modern vaccines that will beat up the latest mutations. But it's not only that. The very idea that Botswana can supply themselves and us while we cannot is really a major cause for concern. But also, Botswana does not have unlimited capacity. There's no way we can put an umbrella across the whole country with the vaccines we buy from Botswana. And as it is, the rumors are rife that we will not have enough vaccines again until March next year, because they need to beef up their capacity, and for that they need to scale down for a few months. And then of course we buy it from them, and farmers have a lot of questions about this transaction. Do we buy it direct from them, state to state, or are there middlemen involved? Because at one stage, the cost of a single shot was 120, 126 rand. Then it dropped to about 80 rand when we started asking the questions. We know that our colleagues in Brazil and Argentina, who have the new vaccine, a much better vaccine than we have, we know that they buy it for the equivalent of 42 rand. We want to know, is there a tenderpreneur in between? And as it is, the farmers are financially suffering because of it. We don't need anyone to load the price as a middleman. If ever there was a priority now for agriculture in this country, it would be to get our production capacity up and running again, to get to the latest biological technologies, and to make sure that the vaccines can be where we need it as soon as possible. At the moment, they say that we can manufacture about 20,000 shots in a month, but that is not enough. It would not only cover 20% or 15% of one of our big feedlots. Foot and mouth disease is one of the most feared diseases by livestock owners in the world, because it's so highly contagious. You know, it runs like wildfire. It is spread from the mouths and body fluids of animals, and it causes sores in the mouth and on the hooves of ruminants. It is a state-managed disease, So the moment that you suspect that there's foot and mouth around, you need to let the state know. And in South Africa, it is endemic. We've always had foot and mouth disease, especially in the northernmost and northeastern parts of our country. Foot and mouth is endemic in the Kruger National Park. All the buffaloes in the Kruger Park would have it, but it does nothing to them. It is when they make contact with cattle that we have damage. Now, how that happens is usually because of elephants. So they break out, and once they've broken the fence, the buffaloes walk out. It mostly happens in the Wembe district or Giani district, where they drink water from the same troughs as the cattle. We've had a few outbreaks, but we managed it previously through zones. We have the red zone where we accept that we will always have foot and mouth disease. And then there's a buffer zone or a blue zone where we do not vaccinate the cattle so that we can pick it up once it has spilled over. And when that happened, we move the border or the boundary of the red zone to that of the blue zone, and we simply close that whole area. And then the rest of the country is called the white zone, which is supposed to be foot and mouth disease free. The first few times when it happened after I've started farming, closing off the area meant that we would put roadblocks on every dirt road, all the main roads, to make sure that no one would move meat or cattle through that boundary of the blue zone. And we did it in our capacity as a member of the Farmers Association or as a member of the commando. And with us at that roadblocks, we had the soldiers, the defense force. We had the police. We had the local traffic officials. And nothing moved through there. We managed the integrity of that line for decades. This is what we've lost since. We do not have roadblocks anymore. We don't have the capacity to cordon off a certain area, so we cannot control the movement of animals. And it will move. If you don't control it, it will move. Because it's the livelihood of both commercial farmers and smallholder farmers who depend on the income they get from selling those animals. And once it's an affected area, it's been declared an affected area, you're no longer allowed to take it to the auction floors or to the feedlots. And the latest outbreak has really spilled over much wider across the country than ever before, even into the Eastern Cape, into the Free State, in the last week or so, also into the Western Cape.
If we ever had any doubts that President Trump has got South Africa high on his list, then we only had to see what he did with the immigration by cancelling pretty much everybody, excepting 7,500 primarily white Afrikaners who would be allowed into the United States. That's quite a vote.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he has been very consistent in this, he doesn't like what's happening in South Africa. And really, it's not because he's picking on South Africa above other countries because he's just, you know, pulled a name out of a hat and decided to be tough on you guys. I think it stems from a real personal relationship that he has with South Africans that he's developed over many years, probably on the golf course. And so when you're out on the golf course with several of your excellent athletes from South Africa and you're spending a lot more time with the president than most people do. But most people would spend years to try to get, you know, an hour with the president. But, you know, you South Africans, because you punch way above your weight in sport, you end up spending a whole lot of time with the most powerful man in the world. And so what do you talk about when you're doing 18 holes? You know, you talk about what's going on at your home. And so that's the context that Donald Trump has had with South Africa over the last several years. And so when he actually became president, and had the ability to do something about it. That's why you hear things like bad things are happening in South Africa. You see the Twitter rants and that sort of thing is because it ranks very high in his consciousness. When someone brings up South Africa, that's what he sees. And again, I think that's one reason why he picked Brent Bozell. I think he wanted someone that he could trust. I think he wanted someone who understands the communication war that is the reality today. I think he wanted someone who was a blank slate, who was willing to see, hear both sides and treat everything fresh, just like Trump is doing in other countries with trade deals, and someone that he can count on to be loyal and to do a good job. And he has, in Brent Bozell, he has all of that. He has someone who's built a stellar reputation, a terrific organization. He's very effective. He's spoken of very highly on Capitol Hill. He has a great family that supports him. I think he's at that time of his life where he could really make a difference. And I think he's very capable and ready for it. And I just hope he gets to your country as soon as possible, because I do believe that it's going to start moving the needle in the right direction. And I'm very optimistic about it personally.
So if he looks back at the end of his term, what do you think he would view, or the media in America or Capitol Hill would say he has been a success? What would he have to achieve?
Well, that's a great question. And I think based on what he told me, if he can move the needle forward when it comes to economic investment and development and stronger ties, or at least to get South Africa back to a non-aligned position, whereas now it's becoming much more Eastern aligned and move them more towards this back to the center, I think that would be considered, you know, in 3 years, a job well done. I do believe that you're going to see some very forward-thinking, outside-of-the-box trade deals that are going to be proposed. I think you're going to see different avenues of engagement that are non-orthodox. And I think just because you have to deal in South Africa with things that you don't always have to deal with other countries. So you have in South Africa this, broad-based state failure on many levels, on town levels, municipal levels, provincial levels. Even the national government is failing to deliver services or even respond in a timely manner to requests by their own members of their own government. And so, if for businesses, for exporters, particularly for producers and manufacturers in South Africa, it's incumbent upon them to create their own avenues of trade, their own avenues. That's kind of what they've done when you look at all the different South African delegations that have gone to the United States. They're not just representing the Afrikaners, they're representing the economy, they're representing the part of society that's still functioning, that wants to continue to trade and develop and create jobs and keep the country going, because the government is doing, in often cases, such a poor job of it. In one of my last conversations with him, Brent Bozell told me that South Africa, you know, has experienced political freedom when now everyone can vote and everyone's treated equally. It's had religious freedom, where you have the right to worship as you choose. But where it's struggling right now is in economic freedom, and those are the areas that you and your channel dwell on a lot: the expropriation without compensation, the government strangulation on businesses, the race-based hiring quotas, the corruption in tenders, the wasted money, the scandals. Those are things that are really holding the country back. And so one of the things that Brent Bozell said in his hearing is that he would like to see increased American investment into the country, but investment that's different from the kind that you see from the East, which treats South Africa as just big resource dump that they can come and just grab and take and pull away. Whereas America would like to invest within South Africa so that, for instance, he mentioned this in his hearing, that we can help South Africa, our companies can help South African companies with their refinement capacities, so that you can refine the minerals that you have in your country and then sell them yourself, instead of just shipping out the raw materials, having them refined elsewhere and not getting the full benefit of that. And so that is a kind of partnership that is a win-win, not just for America, but for South Africa, because you're developing your domestic capacity of production. And that's something that's going to drive up your job numbers and keep the money that you have in the country instead of leaving. And that's what he told me was going to be his focus. So that's good news, because that means he's going to come into the situation with a government of national unity, and he's going to want to be able to find common ground. He is a movement conservative. He is very loyal to the president. The president has a very clear agenda in South Africa in terms of what he doesn't like and what he wants to see change. That's obvious. You know, if we want to have more American companies in the country, we've got to do something about this BEE. We've got to do something about this expropriation without compensation. We have to do something about security and infrastructure. So there's a lot of challenges there. But I think that what Brent Bozell wants to do is he wants America to invest in South Africa in a way that that benefits both countries. That's not just we take from you and use for ourselves. And that, I think, that going into it is very, very good. And the fact that he is sort of tabula rasa, he's a blank slate, means that you're going to be able to, I think, accomplish more because he's not going in with that confirmation bias where he's going to have an automatic closed door with some people in interest. He's going to be able to fairly listen to both sides and hopefully be a bridge, bridging together the different interests in the country to move on a uniform policy that's going to be beneficial for everyone.
How is an American company different at its core to a South African one? And I ask this because talking to Dries Hoger from Walmart earlier this week, he was saying, I asked him about competitors, and always in the South African context, people talk competitors and what are you worried about? Checkers and this and Pick n Pay and Woolworths. And he said, I'm actually not really focused there. I'm focused on my customer. And I know from Amazon, it's the same thing, that Bezos has been saying this since he started the company in his annual reports. It's all about the customer. For South Africans, it sounds a bit like a marketing spiel, but maybe you can just, you are South African, you do know South African businesses. How is there this difference, and what could the more progressive businesses in this country learn?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure if it's the American way, but it's certainly the Amazon way, is the customer obsession. But I think it's quite a misunderstood term, because and many of the companies, including American companies that I've worked for, where they say they're customer obsessed, but if you don't match that customer obsession with a long-term view, you know, very often you're getting to the end of a quarter, end of a year, and you've got a number to make. All of a sudden, customer obsession's out the window, and you're going to do what's best for the company, not the customer. Amazon's very, very different in the way we approach it. You know, we would rather miss a number. We would rather, you know, it's about that customer. It's about giving that customer a great experience. And that comes from embedding some of these mechanisms that we have internally of really listening very carefully. It's all about listening to the customer. And so I spend an inordinate amount of time in our call center, which is in the same complex here, but sitting with the associates. And the way I look at it is every single call to the call center is a defect. But you've got to run that down as to, okay, why did they call? Did they not have the information? Was there, they couldn't access the information, or there was something that went wrong somewhere in the network? And the team will then work through to try and root cause. Can we get to the real root of that challenge so that the experience is a better one for our customers going forward? And there are many, many examples. I mean, I've worked for many US companies, but Amazon, I think, is very unique in that it's easy to say, but it's a lot more difficult to build that into your mechanisms and make that part of your DNA and everything that you do.
You've mentioned associates. I know Walmart does the same thing. They don't call people employees or staff. They call them associates. Is that a big deal?
No, it's not a big deal. I mean, it's just some of the internal terminology that we use. I mean, we also refer to all Amazon employees as leaders, because we see one of the leadership principles is ownership. And so having a, you know, every employee, no matter what your position is, you're a leader because you own that part of the business, that part of the process on behalf of our customer. And so, yeah, sometimes there are these little terms that sort of creep in, but employees, leaders, associates, you know, what's important is, again, the customer. That's our focus. You know, I think what a lot of South Africans don't realize is that Amazon has been in the country for over 20 years. Deep investment. EC2, which is the compute portion of AWS, was actually a lot of the coding started here in Cape Town, started in South Africa. And off the back of that long-term investment, we've invested billions of dollars into the country, local data centers or points of presence in the country. And it extends even beyond that. You know, we have a solar farm up in the Northern Cape, supplying electricity into the grid. We have a skills center that is providing skills training, mainly on the cloud, you know, even AI fundamentals, cloud certification. And that's completely free to any South African who is looking to get certified on cloud or learn more about AI. And those are classroom-based classes. So, you know, deep investment, very, very deep roots, and very much a South African organization in the country.
Have you moved into your new head office in Cape Town?
We moved in about a year ago. So, yeah, very much in the new office.
And working for you, working well?
Yes, Alec, we actually moved. We have moved into the Cape Town office. But I think what is also important is we do have an office up in Johannesburg, and we do have staff right across the country, all 9 provinces. So although we have this facility, we're very much across the entire country.
How's it going with just on the consumer area before we go into more of the business story with Amazon Prime? I've been an Amazon Prime supporter for many years, and we spent time in the UK where it works brilliantly, and then come to South Africa. Hey, man, there are a lot of movies that you can't see here. It says not available in this area. Is that to do with the license agreements that perhaps MultiChoice had set up?
Yeah, so I know, Alec, we have a lot of, you know, huge Prime fans. I'm one of them. Love the experience and having experienced it in the UK and US over many years. I can't comment specifically on the content that is produced for Prime Video, but a lot of times it has to do with rights issues, you know, specific to certain countries. But I know the team's working hard to make sure that there is the content that our customers love and want in the country.
And how long have you now been offering the Amazon delivery experience that is so well used in the US and in the UK and other countries here in South Africa?
So we launched the online store in May of 2024. So it's just over a year, and you know, we're getting amazing feedback from our customers who just love the experience, you know, love the speed of it, but also just the reliability of that delivery. And we're working continually just to enhance that, you know, all the time.
Has it achieved the milestones that you've set out? Because it is a pretty competitive area.
Oh, hell yeah. if I could use the technical term, we've knocked it out the park. We're very, very pleased with the performance, especially for Black Friday. Exceeded all our expectations. And I think most importantly is just the feedback from the customers has been fantastic. I spend a lot of time in our call centers working with the associates and, you know, looking at some of the feedback. The customers love the speed. They love the value for money, you know, just getting, you know, great deals. And great general value across the entire store, and just the experience overall. So great feedback, and we're very, very pleased with how it's going.